I just recently built a home, and I'm just telling you, getting this information is very, very difficult. Especially if you're going to do more than, you know, insulation and windows are one thing, because that's kind of true, tried and tested, but heating systems and solar, right, and all those other decisions that you're making, there's very little data out there to help people make a good informed decision. And I do think this would be really valuable to kind of figure out how do we help people make a decision that is not only better for the environment, but economically will save them money.
On today's podcast, we'll be visiting with our state representative, John Curtis, who found some time out of his busy schedule while running for Senate, amongst all his other duties, to sit down and talk over some environmental concerns. Before we get going, though, I'd like to thank our fiscal sponsor, AIA Utah, for supporting this endeavor. Check AIA.org/Utah to find more information, diagrams, pictures, and resources you may hear on this show, as well as an archived copy of this, other past and future podcasts.
All righty. Well,
okay.
But
we'll make it through.
Yes. Thank you very much, Representative Curtis, for meeting with me
today. Of course, yeah.
On the behalf of AIA Committee on the Environment and also the Utah Chapter of the Building Enclosure Committee, we appreciate the time that you have given us to ask a few questions.
Absolutely. Glad to do it.
So I'll jump right in here.
Okay.
You obviously ski or snowboard, and do you have a favorite ski resort?
Wow, that's a hard question. That's almost like asking me my favorite kid. When I was young, we had a family cabin up Big Cottonwood Canyon and Brighton and Solitude. So I have a soft spot in my heart there, but I don't go there a lot. I probably end up at Deer Valley more than anywhere right now.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, a day on any of the slopes in Utah anywhere would be a good day.
Oh, yeah, it's so good, especially recently. It's
been snowing on. Yeah, yeah.
Which that brings me to the next point. You're on the Ski and Snowboard Caucus, which before doing a little research, I did not know existed. How did you end up on that, and what sort of initiatives are they putting together that revolve around the environment?
Yeah, so they're very, very involved on the environment, because obviously the ski community is very in tune with shorter winters, warmer winters, less snow. And so our initiatives are dealing with all of those things and what we can be doing to conserve water, to do anything that we can. And it's actually, there's a lot of caucuses that are not very active, and this is a fairly active one.
Okay. Does that include Utah, Colorado, California, all the big ski states?
Exactly.
Back east,
too,
I'm
back
sure.
East as well, yeah.
It's very interesting. I'll have to do a little more digging on that. On a separate note, not less serious, but you founded the House Conservative Climate Caucus in 2021 and made climate environmental stewardship a central part of your work in Congress. Can you tell us why you created that and what you've learned and what the primary focus is?
Now, we have an hour for this question, right?
Yeah,
I'll give you the short version.
Yeah.
I think the short version is I was really disturbed as I went back east as a new member of Congress with the reputation that conservatives had around this issue. And it seemed to imply that somehow we didn't care about the environment, that we and didn't want to leave the earth better than we found it. And of course, that's not true. And I think that's, I believe that's innate in all of us, regardless of our party and political affiliation, is this deep desire to leave the earth better than we found it. And so that was what motivated me. And then as I dug into it, I started to find that there were a host of conservative solutions that reduced emissions that were right in the wheelhouse of conservatives. So why are we afraid to talk about those, right? And we needed to be, we had done an excellent job of telling people what we didn't like,
right?
And we needed to be more aggressive saying what we did like. And so the caucus has flourished. It's now one of the largest caucuses in Washington. There's 85 members, House Republicans, that are part of it, all leaning into this. How do we be good stewards from a conservative perspective?
Okay. And there's a lot of financial benefits to lining up with some of these proposals, I would imagine, which helps forward everybody's thoughts on environment, I would think.
So I would just tell you, I think one of the false narratives out there is that to be clean, to be good stewards, we have to let go of affordable energy, reliable energy, and energy independence. And I think that's a great message Republicans / conservatives have, is look, we got a plan to reduce emissions, and we don't sacrifice our economy in doing it. And I think that's one of the mistakes Europe made, is they just put clean above everything and not realizing, look, we also, affordable energy and reliable energy also matters. And buying energy from an enemy matters.
Yeah. Well, geopolitical.
Yeah.
It goes way big.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, next question. President Biden and the Democrats in Congress passed the bipartisan infrastructure law and Inflation Reduction Act over the last few years, which offers billions in tax credits and grants for energy efficiency, renewable energy, electrical vehicles, energy storage, carbon capture, nuclear, and other efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Republicans have generally opposed these bills. Tell us one thing you have found useful about these bills and one thing that you think has been problematic.
Well, let me start with the problematic and why Republicans really struggled, and that's just on the Inflation Reduction Act alone, we spent $1.5 trillion.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money that we don't have.
Yeah.
And people, when they speak about the climate provisions in there, will usually refer to about $300 or $400 billion.
Okay.
And so my point is, well, where's the rest of the $1.2 trillion, right? And so Republicans were faced with, particularly in the House, with a thumbs up or a thumbs down vote on spending $1.5 trillion to have some good outcome. And okay, you can see why that was hard for us to support. And by the way, we weren't consulted in any of the provisions. And now to answer the other side of your question is, there are provisions in there that I would have personally voted for, and many of my colleagues would have voted for in standalone bills. You mentioned some of them, the carbon sequestration and nuclear. And so there were a number of things in there that are Republican priorities, particularly paired, as they did in the IRA, with spending offsets. These would not have been hard votes for Republicans.
Okay, just the lack of candid conversation, maybe.
That it was $1.5 trillion, yeah, right? Instead of saying, okay, well, look, let's target, okay, what does the nuclear industry need? What does carbon sequestration need? What is the proper government role? Great, here's a bill on that. And by the way, all the spending is offset with savings in other places. Let's do it.
Yeah, right. Well, it's another hour-long conversation piece there, right?
Exactly, yeah.
It's a very big bill. Republicans have been skeptical and resistant to newer building codes for residential buildings and have pushed back on the move to electrify home heating and cooling and cooking systems, specifically in Utah. How can AIA and architectural professionals work with you and your colleagues to come to a common ground on these issues?
So this is a really good question, and not one that we should take lightly with just, you know, the stereotypical answers. So let me try to give you thoughtful answers.
Sure,
to this. I think many, and I'll stereotype Republicans, feels like the jury is out and has not been conclusive yet on the environmental impact, good and bad, of some of these alternatives. So if we're all jumping into these, and let's use one outside of your question just for a minute, because mm-hmm. it's a little easier. If this, say, EVs is for instance, okay, we're going to electrify the vehicle fleet. But wait a minute. The number one car that was just voted the best car for the environment is a plug-in hybrid.
Yeah, I just read that.
Yeah, right. So wait a minute. So we've all jumped into EVs being the answer, yet the car that we just awarded, the most environmentally friendly, actually is a combustion engine car.
Sure.
Right.
Partially.
And so I think my point is that I think, and speaking for Republicans, that we need to be a little bit more thoughtful about this. By the way, if we electrified everything, you hear in California Governor Newsom say something like, you know, you're mandated to buy an EV, a gas stove, but please don't charge your car tonight, because we don't have the electricity for it.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
And I just feel like that in many cases it's shoot, ready, aim, and I think a lot of Republicans feel that same way. And if we're going, you know, are we mandating electric stoves? Where's the power coming from? Probably a natural gas plant to power so that you can
energy.
Cook with electric energy, and yet we're using natural gas to allow that to happen. Do you see a problem here?
Yes, and this is one of these deep dives we could get into for
exactly.
Hour
yeah, we can
also, spend, but the, yeah. there is the thought that if everybody was a little bit more electrified when cleaner power comes online, then everybody is elevated at that point. And part of my question too, or maybe just a reaction to that, is are we at a point where we need to jump in and get ahead of ourselves just to get ahead
so
of
I hear that, and I'll go back to EVs. I hear that argument with EVs. It's like, well, we have to do this, right, because we can't hit our goals and our objectives if we don't do this. And that depends. If we're hauling down a road to get to a place and we haven't determined that it is the right road, then I'm going to come back and say, we need to ask a few more questions before we take that fork. And have we really done the study and the background to know that this is absolutely the direction that we're going to go? There also plays into this. I think a lot of Republicans feel like that Americans should have a choice between a gas stove and an electric stove.
Oh, absolutely.
And so if we're mandating right that in electrical codes, then we're taking that choice away from them. And are we doing enough to inform the consumer about their choices? Okay, if you pick a gas stove, these are the consequences. And you know, I think one of the conversations I've heard that people should hear more about is, you know, what's happening in the home with that gas stove as that gas is burned. Do you have some issues with the emissions coming from that gas stove in what you're breathing? Right, and so yeah, let's inform our consumers and help them make good decisions, and I think that's where the pushback comes from Republicans, instead of jumping in and saying, hey, we've predetermined all the answers here, I'm going to force you to do them.
Okay, to pull back on the residential question a little bit, and it's not a purely electrifying question. It's the insulation on the outside
sure.
of the house. It's the windows that are framed as a first cost issue. However, most of the studies out there say that over the cost of or the lifetime of a ownership of a house, you're going to save a lot more money if those first costs are incorporated. And Utah as a state is generally behind most of the country with residential energy code. And I think that's where the question is coming from, and how can we assist and maybe
sure.
pushing
I think,
that forward?
Yeah, this is a great question, and I would love to actually be part of this solution, because if consumers are making choices that cost them more over a 30-year period of time, we've got to do a better job of informing consumers, particularly when they're not paying those costs up front. They're more wrapping them into a mortgage,
mm-hmm.
right? So you could make the argument, well, we just don't have the money to save money. But when you're wrapping it into a mortgage, we've got to do a better job of explaining to people how this let's show you 30 years how this saves you money today,
yep.
right? Not just in 30 years, but let's show you how it saves you money today, and you're more comfortable, and you're doing your part to be a better steward of the earth. And I don't think very many people would make the wrong decision.
Yeah,
right.
And
I think we've just got to do a lot better job of and I just recently built a home, and I'm just telling you, getting this information is very, very difficult.
Oh, for sure.
Especially if you're going to do more than, you know, insulation and windows are one thing, because that's kind of true, tried and tested, but heating systems and solar, right, and all those other decisions that you're making, there's very little data out there to help people make a good informed decision. And I do think this would be really valuable to kind of figure out how do we help people make a decision that is not only better for the environment, but economically will save them money.
Okay, and maybe I'll frame this a little bit different. Should it be codified? Should it be a legislative issue? Because, or are the codes in your eyes too strict right now?
You know, I'm not an expert in that, but I'll come back to, like, what's wrong that we have to put into law something that saves somebody money, right? What are we doing wrong?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? That we have to rely to mandating that versus, well, that's an easy decision.
For sure.
And I guess that's where I think Republicans would tend to pivot first, is to say, well, let's dig down and understand why people are not making that decision. Likely it's because it sounds more expensive, because your upfront cost is more expensive, but then what do we need to do? What's happening so that they're not realizing the savings or not seeing that they're getting the savings that yeah. they think they are?
Okay, so more of a consumer information.
I would say that's absolutely where you start, right? Okay. I mean, that's why would we skip that step?
Well, that should have been included no matter what.
Agreed,
right?
Yeah.
But should we bring our codes up to where a lot of the states are?
So I'm going to leave that to experts like you and the state legislature. But all I know is, like, I think we would solve a lot of this if we just help people make better decisions.
Okay. Done. All right. Next question. What is your top priority in Congress to reduce emissions?
Yeah. This is an easy one. Permitting reform. It's very bipartisan. It's almost unanimously agreed that this is our problem. Right now, any energy project, whether it's a pipeline or a wind farm, cannot move forward. Nuclear is another good example because of the difficulties of permitting. We're having a really hard time getting people to invest in projects. Imagine this sales pitch. All right, I want you to invest in this energy project. It's going to take 10 years before we get an answer about whether we can move forward. And then it's going to take another 10 years to fend off the lawsuits. But I'd like you to, but I'd like you to invest with me today. Right?
Yeah.
And so you can see it's just hugely problematic. And you can lay out any energy goal or any climate goal. We cannot get there unless we improve this permitting situation. So for me, number one priority back in Congress, it's something I'm working on almost daily back there.
Okay. And put the flavor of the building community on this. Our buildings are, they contribute about 40% of the emissions that go out of out into the air and affect all of us. Is there any legislation framed around buildings and how they can perform better or things of that nature? I mean, there's energy. We need energy, and we need to transform energy. We need to permit the projects to get the energy there, but we can perhaps use less energy if our buildings are doing better, and they can create less emissions as they become more efficient. And that's very poignant here in the Utah Valley, up in the Salt Lake Valley, where you see it every day.
Yeah.
And I wonder if there's anything like local or anything related to buildings or cars or.
Yeah, so I'm not very familiar with what's happening on the state level, but most of these, as you mentioned, are the building codes that are adopted at state level, even though there are some national standards as well. And you're getting a little bit out of my wheelhouse, so I'm just not familiar with any legislation pending in D.C. on this right now.
Okay.
And I'm focused. My major focus has been on permitting reform.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you. How do you personally embody the life of a climate-conscious congressman?
Super important question. I think it would be very hypocritical of me to try to pass legislation if I wasn't doing the best in my personal life. I also think, by the way, I think it's hypocritical if people aren't doing their best to ask their congresspeople to pass legislation. So I'm going to put a big disclaimer out there that I'm sure I could be doing better, but I'm happy to share with you some of the things I've done. I mentioned we recently built a home. We put the solar power on top of that. We're using geothermal heat and cool our home. We doubled down on insulation, triple down on insulating our home the best that we could. Try to take as many measures as we could, and this is where I think I mentioned a little earlier in the podcast, this is where it's hard to get information. If you go much beyond insulation and windows and solar, it's really hard to get information about what we can be doing better as we're building our homes. So obviously LED bulbs, I'm trying to, and just some of the really obvious things, I've tried always to be a really good example of that. And my wife and I love to walk to church. We always think it's funny that here in Utah, you have a church building on every corner.
Yeah,
and if you're not careful, you're going to get hit by three or four Suburbans coming from the same household three or four blocks. And so, I say certainly not perfect, but do try to think through my own personal behavior and what I'm doing. I love to garden, love to compost. And
that's great.
I personally think the best thing that we can be doing is millions of small things.
Mm-hmm.
Right, as individuals,
sure.
I think we underestimate that, and Utah County, there's 500,000 households. I used to say when I was mayor, look, if we could get every household to skip one vehicle trip a week, that's 500,000 vehicle trips.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not that hard. Yeah, that's not that hard to walk to church, right? And so I do think this is a really important thing that we maybe not spend enough time on, is what individuals can do.
Yeah, and you pointed out some very basic things about home building and like insulation, windows, solar, and geothermal is that next level. So it sounds like you're very in tune. But I also want to comment that like with those three things, solar, insulation, and windows, you're most of the way there. I mean, simple things like orientation of your home or whatever can go a long, long way. So you don't have to be a technocrat or a specialist
to do those basic. Yeah, good point. Yeah, and by the way, you kind of reminded me, by luck, the way we put our windows and things, we have incredible sunlight and daylight in our home. It was a little bit dumb luck.
Yeah, sometimes it is.
Yeah.
Are you living in it currently?
We are. We've been in about a year and a half.
Yeah. Okay. Do you find it comfortable?
Absolutely. Yeah. Very pleased with our decisions.
Yeah. Very cool. Yeah. All right. Next question. Let's see which one we want to go with here. Do you see an uphill battle on overall climate policy if a certain individual is elected president?
You're a little bit there.
Or, you know.
So let me try to be a little bit more specific. If Republicans have the White House, I would say it's always good, and the right climate policy has always been hard, even in the Biden administration, right, to get the right policy. But I will point out, surprisingly, there's been more bipartisan legislation than meets the eye. I'll go back to the 2000, we passed a bill on hydrofluorocarbons that was, let me get the year right, it wasn't 2000, it would have been, I think it was 2020, hydrofluorocarbons. It was hugely bipartisan, and it got almost no press, right?
Right, that's pretty boring.
Yeah, and I think one of the mistakes we make is when we have successes, we don't spike the football enough.
Sure.
And celebrate. And so I do think it can be a bipartisan issue. I think there is a lot of consensus. If you really sit down with my Democratic colleagues and try to list the differences between my approach and theirs, there's a lot more we agree on than what we disagree on.
Well, that's good to hear.
I'll click some off. Nuclear is a very bipartisan issue. Emerging technologies like hydrogen and fusion and things like that are very bipartisan. Even renewables, sometimes Republicans kind of get tagged with not liking renewables, and I'd say it's not that we don't like them. We probably push back that they're the only, right, if they're the only solution.
Yeah.
It's there's a lot we agree on, and we should be finding consensus on these areas instead of sometimes just focusing on our areas of disagreement.
Gotcha. I don't know if that's the answer to one of these questions here, but you were were the mayor of Provo?
Yes.
As a Democrat? Or you were a Democrat previous?
Yeah, a long time ago. Yeah, 25 years ago. Yeah, the nice thing about being a mayor is it's actually a nonpartisan office.
Okay.
And you just get a focus on issues that are important to people, quality of life issues.
Sorry, and I didn't mean to peg you there, but my observation is that you've seen both sides of things over the years, so it gives you a unique perspective,
sure.
I think, and sounds like you're seeing the bipartisanship, and that's nice to hear.
Yeah, there's more of it than we let on.
Yeah, very good. No, it's exciting because you don't really see very much in the news these days, so.
Yeah, I regret that. The news tends to focus on our dysfunction, which we have plenty of. But when we get along, then they somehow skip that.
Yeah, it's not doesn't make for clickbait there.
Yeah.
I'll wrap up with a question about your socks, as you're famously known. And I wore my Bob Ross socks today.
Ooh, I like those. Yes, very nice.
I'm starting a collection with my family donating. Are there a portion of your socks that you know to be sustainable, recycled content?
Yeah. I don't have the luxury of... I pick my socks based... Let me rephrase that. I pick my socks based on the style and have not had the luxury of gotcha. Of finding a recyclable material. So if you're aware of any, let me know.
Okay, will do. Well, thank you for your time. I think you need to get on to some important matters. Yep. We'll just thank you
Talk
very
again.
Much.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, yeah. Thanks so much. All right.
And that does it. We'd like to thank Representative John Curtis for his time. And we hope you return next time when we continue our podcast series about building resilience. Thanks again to our sponsor, AIA Utah, valued listeners, and please refer to our show notes at AIA.org/Utah. We hope to have you next time.